so good to see all of you here. There's so many faces that I just want to say hi to. Later. Okay. So today is Resurrection Sunday. I need a place to set that. There we go. And it's the day where Christians around the world get to say, "He is risen." And we respond, "He is risen indeed." And that is what we're celebrating all around the world. This Sunday celebrates the linchpin, the core of our faith, right? That in Jesus, God came. God came to rescue us. So that sin and brokenness, hatred and fear and sickness, not even death, will have the last word in our lives. Jesus took all of it and offered love and forgiveness in its place. Jesus conquered death and said, "No more. This will not be the end of your story. I have come and I am coming to make all the sad things untrue, to wipe away every tear from your eyes, to make all things new." This is our great hope as Christians. But we have a hard time living into it sometimes, don't we? Like a parent, God longs to gather us up, to heal all that is broken inside of us, all that we have broken in the world, to make us new and good again, to make our world alive to its creator. But we don't always want that, do we? Or maybe more accurately, we don't always believe that we need it. Because life's okay, right? We don't really want to believe that we need God. We want to do life on our own, live life on our terms. I've got this. I can do it. May surprise you. But Easter has not always made sense to me. And I knew it mattered, but I couldn't really explain why in my own words, which really frustrated me because I am a third generation missionary kid and preacher's kid. So if anyone should be able to explain what Easter is all about in a way that has any significance for them, right? That should be me. I should be able to do that, like from four. You know, but not really. And it was even after I decided to follow Jesus with my life, after I knew that my life belonged to God, that I was going wherever God called me, still, if asked, I could not explain Easter. Now, I could probably explain its theological significance using someone else's words, right? Church tradition and years of Sunday school lessons and so much of that did not leave me completely ignorant about my faith, so I'm sure I could have come up with some kind of answer. But those weren't my words. They didn't mean that much to me. They were theological constructs out there that didn't reflect my heart. And they never really felt right to me. Here's the thing. I loved the stories of Jesus. And I saw incredible beauty in his death and resurrection. I admired Jesus. And I was inspired by the Easter story. I recognized the God that I love at work there, doing something. But I couldn't tell you why it mattered to me, to Carrie. The truth is, Easter can't mean very much to you until you realize that you need it. Until you come face to face in an undeniable way with your own brokenness, until you recognize how limited you are, which just irks me to say. Easter is just this strange and maybe heartwarming story. But it's hard to make it mean much more than that. So there's this moment in the Gospel of Luke that I really love, because it's a moment where we catch a glimpse of this realization happening for people. It's the people that are present at Jesus' crucifixion. And I want you to listen and see what you notice. Pilate called together the chief priests, the rulers, and the people, and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was inciting the people to rebellion. I have examined him in your presence and have found no basis for your charges against him. Neither has Herod, for he sent him back to us. He's done nothing to deserve death. Therefore, I will just punish him and release him and we'll move on," right? But the whole crowd shouted, "Away with this man, release Barabbas to us." Barabbas, who had been thrown into prison for insurrection in the city and murder. Wanting to release Jesus, Pilate appealed to them again, but they kept shouting, "Crucify him, crucify him." So for the third time, he spoke to them, "Why? What crime has this man committed? I have found in him no grounds for the death penalty. Therefore, I will have him punished and then release him." Yeah, that's good enough, right? But the loud shouts from the crowd insistently demanded that he be crucified, and their shouts prevailed, as we know. How would you describe the crowd there? Are they happy? Not so much. Are they sad? They're angry, aren't they? They are angry. They are throwing every bit of anger and frustration they have at Jesus. He's the one to blame. And then we read, "It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m, for the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two, and Jesus called out in a loud voice, 'Father, into your hands I commit my spirit.' And when he said this, he breathed his last. The centurion, seeing what had happened, praised God and said, 'Surely this was a righteous man.' And when all the people, the crowd who had gathered to witness this sight, saw what took place, they beat their breasts and went away. But all those who knew him, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance, watching these things." Why did the crowd beat their breasts? They got what they wanted, right? They were angry, and it was Jesus' fault, and they killed him. They crucified him, which is what they demanded. Crucify him, crucify him. They came to jeer and to watch. They saw Jesus die, and then they walked away, beating their breast. Why? What's going on with this crowd? I think there was something in those moments when the sky turned dark and Jesus breathed his last, something that made the centurion say, who was a stranger, no stranger, by the way, to death by violent means. So this was just not a shocking moment for him. But he saw something that was different in Jesus, enough for him to say, "Surely this was a righteous man." And this crowd that had demanded Jesus' crucifixion was suddenly confronted with their own brokenness. And something in that moment, it was as if it held a mirror up to the people there, up to the crowd. And after they had thrown all their anger and all their hatred and all their frustration, all their fear at Jesus, he died loving them. And it let the wind out of their sails, so to speak. You know, they walked away beating their breast. And I think there's two pieces to the puzzle of what's going on there, to the sudden change in their behavior. I think they didn't like what the cross revealed about themselves. We don't want to see that in us. That's not me, right? They thought they were the good guys. Rome was the bad people, right? They were the good guys. And some small part of them hoped that as they mocked Jesus, he might actually prove to be the powerful messenger from God that he claimed to be, and that he would come down from that cross and obliterate those Roman oppressors and free them and free himself. But instead, when all their anger and hatred were spent, they realized that the enemy wasn't Jesus. And it wasn't the Roman oppressors. The enemy wasn't out there, something that they could kill or blame. No. Suddenly, they saw the truth. That they were their own worst enemy. And all those things that made them angry, it ran through them too. They were their own worst enemy, and they were powerless to change that. And so they despaired and walked away. Because it was in that moment that it seemed like injustice and hatred and fear and death, the stuff inside of them and the stuff in the world that they hated, had won. And that those things would always win. But there's something they didn't know yet, right? Jesus was going to take that power, that symbol of Roman power, the cross that was used to humiliate and destroy anybody that would defy the power of Rome. And Jesus was going to use that cross to show that there is a greater power at work in the world. God. A God who is love. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them, and in their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered over to the hands of sinners, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again." And they remembered his words. What these people, those mockers and scoffers at the foot of the cross, didn't realize, and what we need to remember, is that that moment, when we come to the end of ourselves, it's not the end of our story. We are broken people living in a broken world, but there is more to our story because our story is wrapped up in God's story. So before we turn away or deny that any of that is a part of us, right? We need to remember that God has come in Jesus to redeem and save and rescue us. That we are loved by God. And that love reaches into every part of our lives. That cross moment, when we realize that we aren't all we want to be, that we are limited and vulnerable and capable of good, but also capable of evil. That's a low point. And those of you who've been there, you know it, right? It's not fun. It feels kind of awful. Because you just think so highly of yourself. I don't know why, but I do anyway. And there's this moment where we lose hope in ourself. You're laid bare You're exposed. And you realize that we don't make the best judge or king of the world, or even our own lives, for that matter. It's frustrating. We see that we can't fix ourselves, and we can't fix this broken world. We can't stop places from being bombed, and we can't stop people from wanting to bomb other people. It's in us, and it is in the world. Jesus' resurrection points us back, all the way back to the beginning, to a world that was irreparably broken, marred by our insistence on choosing our own way and doubting God's love. Maybe God's holding out on me, right? I mean, this really seems like a good idea I have. But incredibly, Jesus comes and says, this will not be the end of your story. Jesus defeats the power of death and sin and said, no more. Jesus Christ in us gives us the power to be and to do more than we could ever do and be on our own. Jesus gives us the promise that one day he will wipe every tear from our eyes, right? And all the sad things will come untrue. Jesus, how we need you to come. Easter is not hard to take in or accept or explain because it's an incredulous story that really just defies reason and logic and science, and therefore it's just hard to understand or explain. We can believe that God is real, and if we make that leap, it's really no great leap to believe that God, you know, conquered death and that God could raise Jesus from the dead. No, Easter is hard to take in. It's hard to accept and explain because we don't want to believe that we need it. Our hearts have a hard time accepting that. We don't want to believe that we need Easter. I want to be the master of my fate. I want to believe that I am in the right, that I'm one of the good guys, and that I know and I can do what is best. But the truth is, I can't. I'm not always in the right. And it's not without the power of Jesus living and active in my life that I can become all that God meant me to be. So somewhere along the way, I have begun to realize that I don't just admire Easter anymore. That I need it. That me, Carrie, I need it. And suddenly, this incredible good news of Jesus' resurrection, it starts to make sense. I can grasp it a little better. Because it's in that dark moment when you come to the place that is the end of yourself and you see how desperately we need Jesus, that he comes. And slowly and tenderly, Jesus sits down beside us, begins to bind up our mangled hearts, wraps us in the warmth of God's powerful love, and shines light and life into the dark places of our soul. And we can be made new. That is the good news. So a few weeks ago, I'm going to move this just so y'all can see it. My kids were talking to, I have a 3 and a 6-year-old. You probably saw the superwoman running around here. So they were talking to their grandparents on FaceTime. And it was, you know, one of those really rowdy days, which is kind of every day with them, where, you know, just the life and the energy cannot be contained in their little bodies or in the walls of our house. And so they just kind of ping pong all over the place. And so they were somewhere in the process of showing the grandparents their new dance moves. They always have new dance moves. And they're never small, slow, quiet dance moves. They are always, you know, shaking the whole house dance moves. And so they're doing this and they're stomping around the kitchen like little giants. And I'm in the other room working on something and I just keep coming in and interrupting them and saying, hey guys, you're going to hurt somebody. You're going to hurt something. You're going to, you know, tear something up, crash into each other. I mean, we've done it all. Can we just talk to the grandparents? Can we do that? And as I turn around for the 100th time that I've gone in there, I hear a crash. And I turn around to see my communion cup that I got when I graduated from. And I took one look. It was scattered all over the floor. We have a tile floor. And I knew it was ruined. It was never going to hold liquid again. So I moved the kids away, right? So they don't get hurt and so they don't see this. It's fine. Okay, just move. Just come over here. And I got a broom and I started gathering up all the pieces of my cup. And Oliver and Lyra, those are our kids, they felt terrible. They didn't really know what had happened. They knew something had broken, which happens a lot in our house. So I actually try not to have very nice things at home. But they knew something bad had happened. And they didn't quite understand it. And so I hugged them and I said, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And they went back to talking to their grandparents. But I kept the broken pieces because they remind me of something important. They remind me that there is a brokenness in me and in this world that I cannot fix on my own. I cannot make everything okay all the time. And these shattered pieces remind me that I can't bring the kingdom of God on my own. But I know the one who can. I know the one who can. And like a parent, God longs to reset all our shattered, broken pieces, to heal all that is broken in us and in this world. And we get a little closer to understanding Easter when we've had the experience of sweeping up our broken pieces. The broken pieces of who we are, the broken pieces of the people we care about in this world that we can't help the way we want to. And the broken pieces of our world that we can't hold together the way we wish we could. And we learn to hold them up to God. So I want to encourage you. When those moments come, when you're confronted by your exasperating limitedness, your failures, your frustrating insistence on choosing your own way because you just know this is a good plan or just one you want to do. Don't hide it away. don't pretend it's not there. But instead, hold it up to God and discover the God who makes all things new. Our world may not know or want to know that it needs an Easter morning. But we do. We do. And maybe that's enough. Come, Lord Jesus, come.